Morning. Really good to have you here. I read something that caught my attention recently, but unfortunately, although it did catch my attention, it didn't really surprise me much at all. I read that sociologists now have a new type of poverty. They've kind of added a new type of poverty to the list of various categories and types of poverty. There's many distinctions, many specifics, so many ways to speak to poverty in general, poverty in all its forms. But most will include, if you kind of look around, most will include three major types of poverty among the many specifics and among the many distinctions of poverty. Most will include three types of poverty. Number one, there's material poverty. It's probably what you think of most when you hear this term. This is just the lack of basic needs. The second one is this, which might come as a surprise to you, but I think it's a real deal. There's actually a category called spiritual poverty, which is the lack of eternal meaning or having some kind of lack of eternal purpose. And then here's a third that I want to talk about a little bit this morning. There's a third that many are now adding to the list, which is this: relational poverty. Relational poverty. This is the lack of real intimate relationships becoming a real thing, relational poverty. In fact, according to a study in the mid-2000s from the American Sociological Review, a quarter of Americans, 25%, at this time that was roughly 80 million people, say that they have zero close friends. Zero people that they can confide in. I'm not talking about like zero people to go out to dinner with or zero people to catch up with afterward, but zero, zip, zilch, nada, zero people that they can confide in. And some years later now, I have to imagine that, I don't know, that this is only getting worse. It's relational poverty. And in his book, Divine Direction, which has really inspired this whole series, Craig Groeschel did some research to find out why this was, why people don't have these types of relationships as much anymore. And he summarizes what he found. He summarizes his research and his reading into four main reasons. This is just Craig summarizing what he found into four main reasons why we don't have these types of close relationships anymore. Number one, people are working more. A 2016 ABC News article says that Americans work more than anyone. So here's how this goes, right? This isn't rocket science. The more you work, the less you can relate socially to other people in your life, the less you're able to develop or maintain or to grow real significant friendships outside of work. Here's number two, people are moving more. Right? In today's world, people don't stay in one place as long as they used to. And that's not, I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a thing, right? In almost 11 years of marriage, Erica and I have lived in three different states, and we have moved in and out of two different apartments and three different homes. Okay, so in case you're curious, we have no plans or interest in moving again anytime soon, right? That's just kind of a thing. It's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a thing that has an impact on the relationships that we form. People moving more often. Number three, this is just what Craig Groeschel found, that people are experiencing divorce more often than they used to. And he just says oftentimes the reality is that just as possessions get split up, sometimes friends sadly do too. Couples kind of divide their friends and some take one side or the other. And so friendships begin to fracture and don't be as strong as they once were before. And then number four, people are talking online more. This is the fourth thing that he found. There's so many positives and benefits about all these new online platforms that we have and that we can take advantage of, but not without significant downsides as well, right? Here's the downside. Here's the problem with this, that most people, that they carefully and they meticulously filter what they say online with others so they can present only their best selves at all times, right? And that makes it so much more difficult to be authentic be authentic and be real in real world and in real time and in face-to-face relationships. You've all had that like relationship with someone who like their text messages and Facebook messages are all like, great, and hey, we love you, this is great. And then you talk to them in person, you're like, well, this is awkward, right? We don't know how to like have, real face-to-face relationships anymore. The truth is we have more points of contact in our world today, more places and more platforms where we can engage with other people, and yet at the same time, we are lonelier than ever. Lonelier than ever. I've heard it said that some people will wake up in the middle of the night, Okay, with three kids at home, I go to bed praying to God every night that I would just sleep through the night, right? But I've heard that some people will wake up in the middle of the night to check Facebook because they feel so alone, to check if someone liked or clicked or commented or shared something with them there. Folks, this idea of relational poverty, I think it's the real deal. And I think it makes one thing very clear, that friendships and relationships really do matter a great deal. But it's not really just my opinion on the matter. It's important to me because actually both the Bible and both social sciences today say it's important. Both have a great deal to say about the importance of good friendships and about surrounding ourselves with the right kind of people. Here's just a few examples. Listen to Proverbs 27:17. It says this, "As iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend." What's that saying? Right? It's saying that a good friend in our life makes us better, right? Makes us a better follower of Jesus. It makes us a better parent, a better spouse, a better sibling, a better son or daughter, a better student, a better boss, a better employee, and the list goes on, right? I want friends in my life who do all of that for me, who make me better at what it is that I do. Earlier in that same chapter, Solomon, he's the author of these wisdom sayings. That's what the book of Proverbs is, these book of wisdom sayings. Earlier in that same chapter, Solomon writes this, Proverbs 27:6. He says, "Wounds from a sincere friend," follow me here, "wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy." He's saying, close friends in our life, they want what's best for us. They really do. Right? And so an open rebuke from them or correction from them or hard truth from them that's hard to hear, but it is the truth, that's something that we can trust. That's something that's good for us ultimately in the end. But the same cannot be said about the praises and about the applause from people who do not want what's best for us. Friendships, close friendships matter. Here's one more. I really like this. Proverbs 13:20. "Walk with the wise and you will become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm." Simply put, if you kind of translate this, simply put, you are who you run with. Walk with the wise and you will become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. You are who you run with, right? The people that you hang out with, they rub off on you. They will have an impact on the person that you are, on the person that you are becoming, right? But it's really not just the Bible that's saying that. In case you're curious, like, hey, that's really great. I'm not quite sure what I think about all that stuff. It's not just Proverbs that's saying this. Sociologists actually suggest that you become the average of your five closest friends, right? Some of you are going, uh-oh. Five closest friends, you become the average of them. So that gives a real life look to this idea that you are who you are. Think about your five closest friends, or maybe it's not friends because statistics show we don't really have friends anymore, right? So think about the five people that you spend most of your time with. Do you want to be the average of those people put together? That's a worthwhile question to ask yourself. Do I like the direction that this crew is taking me? You got to think about it. Because friendships, these kind of relationships in our life matter. Pastor and writer Andy Stanley, he's often said, I've heard him say it all the times, that your friends will determine the direction and the quality of your life. I'll say it again. Your friends will determine the direction and the quality of your life. I think that's what all of these ideas and all of these sayings and all these findings about friendships are really getting at. They matter. And if all of this is true, if this is all true, then there's a really important decision that we need to make today in light of it all. And that's what this whole message series is all about. Seven decisions that will change your life. Right? We believe it's the decisions that we make today that will determine the stories we tell about our lives tomorrow, right? So that's what this series is all about. It's the small and consistent decisions that we make that will determine those very stories that we tell about our lives tomorrow. So if all this is true, about friendship, if all this is really true, that our friends and our relationships really are that influential and they really have that large of an impact on who we are and who we become and what becomes of us, if that's true, and at the same time, if it's true that we really are living in a time when we have fewer and fewer of these close friends, if this relational poverty thing is really true for us, for you and me, then right now is the time for us to make an important decision. Next decision in this series. It's time for us to make an important decision that very well could change our lives. And that decision is this: to connect. Right, to connect with people that God has placed in our lives. That if all of this is true, that friendships are this important, yet we really don't have these types of friendships in our lives as much as we used to, then now is the time to make the decision consistently, daily, to connect with the people that God has placed around us. We have to work hard to fight against the tendencies to work more and to play less. We have to fight off the tendencies to engage with people only from the safety of the other side of our computer screens, right? We have to fight off the tendencies to stay guarded, right? To play our cards pretty close to our chest and to close ourselves off. We have to fight off the tendency to insulate and to isolate ourselves from people around us, fooling ourselves that that's just kind of who we are. There's a Christian pastor and blogger, his name's Kerry Newhoff, and he said it perfectly when he was talking about the recent trend that spirituality is becoming more of an individual pursuit and less of a community activity. Here's what he says. He's being honest here. He says, I feel that pull too, to make it just kind of an individual thing, not a community thing. He says, I feel that pull too, but I have to remind myself that for the most part, my desire to skip and to pull away and to do my own thing on my own schedule isn't solitude, it's isolation. It isn't solitude, cannot fool ourselves, it's isolation. Got to fight off these tendencies to do our life like that. In light of this reality, folks, in light of this reality of relational poverty, the decision to connect intentionally, consistently, daily, the decision to connect, to open yourself up, to reach out and to reach across, it could be the best decision that you ever made. Could be the decision that changed everything for you. Could be the best decision you ever made. Here's why. Because when I take all of this into account, everything that I've been saying here about friendship and reading and studying, when I take all of this into account, I start to wonder if this might be true for you. Start to wonder if you might be, if it's possible that you might be one friendship away from a future you never knew was possible. When I take all of this into account, I start to wonder if it might be true that you are one friendship, one relationship away from a future that you never knew was possible. One connection away from completely changing directions. Now that might seem a little exaggerative to you. You may be thinking I'm being a little dramatic here, but I don't think that I am in saying that. That you might be one friend away from a future that you never knew was possible. That might sound dramatic to you, but it doesn't sound dramatic to me because there's actually a friendship, there's a relationship, there's a connection that formed in the Bible that proves this to be entirely true. Okay, there's a lot of famous friendships and partnerships from the Bible. Maybe some of them sound familiar to you. There's David and Jonathan. There's Moses and Aaron. There's Elijah and Elisha, right? But I'm not talking about any of those friendships, actually. I'm talking about a friendship in a moment that actually very easily could just go overlooked, right? David and Jonathan, that's kind of the big famous one. But I'm talking about a friendship in a moment between these two people that could very easily just go overlooked. It's a moment in the chapter of the life of a guy known as the Apostle Paul and his friend named Barnabas. And it plays out in Acts chapter 9. Acts is just the book in the New Testament that talks about all the Acts of the apostles and of the disciples, right? And so this all plays out in Acts chapter 9. Here's a little background information, a little lead-up information for you to this moment that I'm going to read for us, okay? Paul, this guy, the Apostle Paul, at this time that we're going to be reading from, his name is actually Saul, right? Sometimes when people had significant, like, face-to-face encounters with God, that moment is kind of marked with a change of their name, and that's kind of what happened here. So at this time that we're going to be looking at, his name is Saul, so that's kind of how I'm going to refer to him. And Saul was a religious zealot. I mean, like, fanatical, who was adamantly opposed to the person of Jesus, who was turning the whole religious world on its head. And so he was actually also adamantly opposed to all those who called themselves followers of Jesus. He actually spent his days threatening and persecuting and murdering Christians. And so one day he was on his way to Damascus to wreak some serious havoc on Christians, on these followers of Jesus, and God shows up, stops him in his tracks on this road to Damascus. And God takes away his eyesight. He can't see anymore. And God leads him on this wild goose chase to meet up with a guy named Ananias, who had instructions and who was kind of ready and waiting to give Saul his eyesight back again. God had told Ananias, hey, go find this guy, Saul. He's praying for someone to show up, and he's waiting for someone to show up. And when you do, his mind is going to be blown, right? And so Ananias goes and finds Saul, and he places his hands on Saul, and he says, hey, God sent me here. And it says that in this moment, it says that immediately something like scales fell from Saul's eyes, and he could see again. So he's like, okay, this is a real deal. Something's happening here. He could see again. And it says he got up, and he was baptized. And because of this experience, right, that he had, he becomes all of a sudden one of the newest and one of the most enthusiastic and one of the most outspoken followers of Jesus. One of the most influential figures in the earliest church, okay? So he was on his way to Damascus to murder those who followed Jesus, but he ended up spending several days there in Damascus preaching to everybody about the good news about who Jesus is and what Jesus came to do. And so people are like confused, right? People are like, what? Is this the same Saul that like we've been hearing about? Like this cannot be the truth, right? But it was him. It was Saul. And the Bible says that he became even more and more powerful and more influential, okay? That's when trouble starts brewing for Saul. His old bash brothers, okay, these Jewish religious zealots and these fanatics, they now conspire to kill their old buddy Saul. They don't like the new Saul, right? They like the old Saul. They like their old partner in crime, and so they're not happy, right? But Saul finds out about the plot to kill him, and so he escapes by night through an opening in the city wall. And so now he's on the run and he's fleeing for his life. His old buddies are out to get him and he is hightailing it out of there. Hightailing it on his way to Jerusalem where he is hoping to find friends, where he is hoping to find safety, where he is hoping to find a hospitable reception from the guys that are now on his team. And so that's where we're going to pick up this morning. Saul is on the run, hightailing it for Jerusalem, hoping he'll find some people who take him in. It's verse 26, and I'm going to be reading from a translation of the Bible that's actually called The Message, which is actually more of a paraphrasing version of the Bible. It's not extremely technical, but in a moment, I'm going to tell you why I really, 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 really like this translation of this particular story here the most. So here's Acts chapter 9, starting in verse 26. Saul is on the run, heading to Jerusalem, and then we read this. Back in Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples. Okay? Because of this moment on the road to Damascus, he just switched teams. And so now he figures he'll find safety with his new peeps, right? These other disciples, these other followers of Jesus. He's figuring, hey, they'll take me in. I mean, they'll take good care of me. And so he's hightailing it, trying to find these guys, figuring I'll be safe over here. There's just one problem. Here's what it says. But they were afraid of him. Right? Back in Jerusalem, he tried to join the other disciples, but they were afraid of him, and they didn't trust him one bit. I don't know if I can blame them, right? This is the guy who has literally been spewing out murderous threats against them. And then all of a sudden he shows up and he's like, hey, I'm one of you guys now. I mean, I started thinking about this. I wonder if this is how the Minnesota Vikings felt the first day Brett Favre showed up for practice. They're like, whoa, what are you doing here, man? He's like, yeah, I'm on your team now. They're like, no, you're not on our team, man. Right? Some things it's like hard to wrap your mind around. Like, that just does not feel right. Okay, this is what's happening here. Saul, he switched sides, and now he's looking for safety and support from his new guys, and the disciples are going, I don't know about this, dude. We've heard about you, man. This doesn't feel right. But eventually, they take him in. They got concerns, you better believe it. But eventually, they take him in. Here's why. Here's what happened. Here's the very next verse, right? They didn't trust him one bit, but then Barnabas took him under his wing. And he introduced him to the apostles, and he stood up for him. And he told them how Saul had seen and spoken to Jesus on the Damascus road, and how in Damascus itself, he had laid his life on the line with his bold preaching in Jesus' name. Barnabas goes to bat for him. And the result is this. Here's verses 28 through 30. After that, after Barnabas sticks his neck out, after Barnabas goes to bat for him, after that, he was accepted as one of them. Going in and out of Jerusalem with no questions asked, uninhibited as he preached in the Master, that's Jesus, uninhibited as he preached in Jesus' name. But then he ran afoul of a group called the Hellenists, who it notes that he had been engaged in a little kind of running argument with. So he ran into some problems with these Hellenists who plotted his murder. And when his friends, that's an interesting word, right? When his friends, these guys that just a moment ago were going, I don't know. But when his friends now learned of the plot, they got him out of town and they took him to Caesarea and they shipped him off to Tarsus. So these disciples, they go from being afraid and skeptical to accepting and supporting to aiding and protecting Saul. And it all hinged on Saul's connection with Barnabas. And the Message translation here, this is why I really love this. The Message translation here of that verse says it like this, that Barnabas took him under his wing. Took him under his wing. I like that. I like that. That's why that phrase right there, took him under his wing, that's exactly why I read this specific translation for you. Normally the Message isn't a very technical, normally it isn't a very or extremely accurate word-for-word translation of the Bible from its original language to ours. But in this case, I think they hit the nail right on the head, okay? The word being translated, took him under his wing, it's the Greek word epilambanomai, okay? Big fancy word, don't have to remember that. You probably think I'm a geek for just saying, okay? It's a big fancy word. Epilambanomai. And it means literally this, okay? It means to take hold of, to take possession of, or get this, to seize with the hands. It's a physical thing to take hold of. If it's used as a metaphor, it means to rescue one from peril or to help someone. And so most translations that I would normally read for us on a Sunday morning, most translations said this about Barnabas, that Barnabas took him and brought him, as if he's like, hey, follow me, we're going to go over here. Took him and brought him. But I think the Message got it right. I mean, I think the Message translation says it best. Barnabas took hold of Saul. He took hold of him with his hands to help him, to rescue him from danger. Barnabas took him under his wing. And he brought him before the other guys, and he stuck his neck out on the line, and it changed everything. Bible scholars who look into this stuff, they refer to Barnabas as one of the great encouragers, one of primarily two great encouragers of Saul and everything that he went on to do. They consider Barnabas to be one of his greatest encouragers, suggesting that we all need the same kind of person in our life, that we need a Barnabas in our life. Why? Why do we need that? Why do we need a Barnabas in our life? Why do we need someone like this in our life? Because you know this to be true, that we often find ourselves in the same kind of dire situations which Paul found himself. We find ourselves in similar situations, suffering from rejection or from loneliness or from disappointment or from despair, or maybe suffering from, you know, feelings of being lost or desperate or hopeless, or you fill in the blank, right? We find ourselves in those very same situations. But here's the good news for us. If we opened ourselves up to it, here's the good news for us that this story highlights. That God often opens up the right path for us in the form of the right person next to us. That's the good news. If we would open ourselves up to this idea, that God often opens up. If we look at the story with Saul and with Barnabas, we see this to be true, that God often opens up the right path for us in the midst of whatever we're experiencing, in the midst of whatever kind of situation that we're in, going, man, where do I go? Where do I turn? What do I do next? Where do I go next? God often opens up the right path forward for us in the form of the right person who is standing right next to us. And so the question is, will we choose, will we make the decision to connect? I think for some of you that there's some people that are in your life that are there for you, that are standing right next to you, are standing right alongside of you. And the question is, will you make the decision to connect? Because God often opens up the right path forward for us in the form of the right person who is standing right next to us. This was the case for Saul, right? Things were not looking good. Things were not looking good in that moment for Saul. He didn't receive the kind of homecoming that he was expecting. But God had, long before any of this happened, God had chosen Saul to accomplish his purposes. God had a plan for Saul, and so he opened up the right path forward for Saul, which was acceptance and support and encouragement and protection and help. He opened up the right path forward for Saul in the form of the right person who was in his life. It was Barnabas. And I think that God is prepared to do the very same thing for you in whatever situation you find yourself in right now. I think God is prepared to do the very same thing for you, to open up the right path forward for you in the form of the right person who is standing alongside you. How do you find that person? Can I promise you that the right person will come blazing into your life at just the right moment? The truth is, I can't. Unfortunately, I cannot do that. I can't give you some formula that guarantees that that you, you know, find the person. I cannot give you some formula guarantees that the person that you need will be there in the moment when you need them most. I wish I could do that, but I can't give you some kind of formula or guarantee like that. But I think that you give yourself a pretty darn good shot at that becoming a reality. I think the odds increase exponentially for you, for that to happen. When you make the small, the seemingly insignificant, but intentional and consistent and daily decision to connect with the people that God has placed around you, to connect to these people when it would be so much more easier and probably so much more natural and so much more comfortable to just remain alone, closed off, isolated, insulated from the rest of the world around you. So let me just ask you this. Could it be possible that there is a need for you to connect with someone in a real, in a meaningful way? Is it possible that the right path could open up right in front of you because of the decision that you made to connect with the people that God has placed around you? Is it possible that there is some area in your life that could completely shift or change directions because someone took you under their wing? Maybe there's someone that you need to speak into your life, or someone that you need to hold up your arms, or maybe there's someone that you need to listen to you or to support you, or maybe there's someone that you need to take you in, to take hold of you with their own hands and with their own heart. Maybe there's someone that you need to take you under their wing. For the record, just so I can say this, you all hear me. For the record, answering yes to any of those questions, yes, maybe there's a need for me to do that. Yes, maybe I need someone to step into my life. Yes, maybe I need support here or there. For the record, answering yes to any of those questions is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of real wisdom to be able to say, yep, there's a good chance of that, Sten. Yep, I might be in need of that. Yep, I might be in need of someone in my life. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of wisdom. And if you think the answer might be yes to some or to any of those questions, then I'm hoping and that I'm praying that you'll make the decision to open yourself up, to reach out, to reach across, and to connect to the people who God may have placed in your life for that very reason. To connect to these people that you're going, man, I don't know where they came from. I don't know why they showed up right now, but maybe it's the decision to connect with those people that God put in your life for that very reason. Because here's what I believe. I really do believe that every one of us may be one friend away from a future that we never even dreamed of. One friend away from a future that we could not even imagine. I think we might be one connection away from changing directions and never looking back. I believe that we might be one conversation away from the right door opening up for us. One accountability partner away from taking some of the biggest steps forward in our faith and our commitment to Jesus, or some other area of our life where we are trying to make some serious progress. I think we could be one introduction away from finding the cause or the job or the career that our hearts beat for. We could be one small group away from finding the wisdom and finding the support that we needed to navigate the road ahead, or one mentor away from being the employee or the professional or the parent or the student or the man or the woman that God created us to be. And so today, this week, would you make the decision That's what we're talking about. Seven decisions that could change our life. Would you make the decision to connect with and to open yourself up to the people that God has placed around you? Because whatever situation you find yourself in right now, God very well may be ready to open up the right path for you in the form of the right person that is alongside of you. And I'm hoping that you and I choose that path every single time. Let me pray for us. God, we give you thanks for this morning. We give you thanks for the chance to be here. Beautiful day, on a weekend we look forward to, on a weekend when we give thanks for those who paid the ultimate sacrifice for us, God. And we give you thanks, too, that your son Jesus paid the ultimate sacrifice, God. For all these things, we're grateful, God, and we're grateful to you for these moments now to speak into our hearts and into our lives, God. And I'm praying that you would help us to know and to identify, God, and to maybe be, you know, open and honest with ourselves about, you know, the type of relational life that we live. It's easy to isolate. It's easy to insulate. It's easy to close ourselves off, God. And so I just pray that you would help us to know when it is or where it is that we need to make this decision to start to connect with the people that you very well may have placed in our life for a reason that we had no idea about. So God, would you give us the courage to connect with the people that we need to connect with most? Would you push us out of our comfort zone, push us away from maybe what feels most natural or feels most comfortable? And would you help us to find the Barnabas that we might need that literally could change everything for us? God, I'm asking for your help. And I'm asking you to give us all the courage and the wisdom to know how and where and when to take this step that could change everything. We thank you for this morning. We thank you for this chance to be together. And we do thank you for your son, Jesus. And it's in his name that we pray. Amen.